It is 9:32. The Committee on Housing Planning and Operations is hereby in session for purposes of hearing four different presentations. We're going to begin by acknowledging the presence of Legislator Harkin, Legislator Myers, and myself, which gives us a quorum for doing business, if not for voting. We have four items on the agenda, and the first is a, let's call it a preliminary update report on the Collaborative Assessment Commission. And we have with us two people who will give us their names, and then we'll, for the record, and will then give us the update. Chuck.
Okay, I'm Chuck Lesnick, Yonkers City Council President here in my capacity as President of the Westchester Municipal Officials Association.
Dave Jackson, Executive Director of the Tax Commission. I guess my capacity is a member of the Collaborative Assessment Commission.
Excellent.
The brains behind the whole operation.
And what have you guys been doing for the last year?
We actually have been going through this report with painstaking detail. We've been meeting every couple of weeks with the assessors and a group of the municipal officials with David's guidance and the guidance of ORPS from the state. And we will have a report very soon, probably within the month, that will address the commercial database, the creation of a centralized system to record sales and lease transactions countywide to assist assessors in valuing commercial property, and basically to provide an equitable treatment of the property. We're going to talk about the oblique, angle, aerial, and street level photography countywide to capture and distribute that information and get it down to the cities, towns, and villages, and the county, of course, have a key role in as custodian of that information. But the information will probably be housed in cyberspace somewhere, so it won't necessarily be in one location, but it'll be accessible by a code to any of
the
assessors.
Well, at this point in time, that project is going to be working on an integration effort. So each assessment system will be directly linked locally with that photography. The cyberspace piece is something down the line.
The property inventory, we're going to recommend, well, we have 18 characteristics, specific characteristics to be verified and collected and maintained by local assessing units on a cyclical basis. We have to figure out what the cost of initially achieving that goal will be, and making it expeditious, cost-effective, and non-intrusive. Some municipalities have more, some have less, and we have to standardize the data. And then lastly, we're going to draft some county home rule legislation that, again, would require a cyclical revaluation of all properties in the county using a uniform property characteristics. And we're also going to outline various property tax relief measures that either can be implemented immediately or that require legislative activity, because so many people are going to be looking at this as a silver bullet to bring taxes down. We just want to show them, okay, there are these things like the circuit breaker and other things on the side, but this is what we're doing as far as fair and equitable tax. And, you know, we just spent $12 million in tax certs in Yonkers this year. I think that's less than we spent last year. The county spent $10 million.
It's a minimum 10. It's last several years has been well over $10 million in what the county has refunded. And that represents anywhere, based on your estimate, from 15 to 18% of the levy. So you're talking about an expenditure by all taxing districts. If you just use $10 million and divide it by 18% of $55 million a year, there are municipalities that are far lower than that 18%. So you could be looking at a much more significant number.
Wow.
So we're looking to save you money, as well as save the money to the various municipalities. If we get into the cyclical system where, let's say by 2015, 2016, we are all assessed accurately throughout the county, and we do this on a four-year basis, and people only have the right to grieve maybe in the first year, that will be a tremendous savings of resources to the municipalities and to the county, has to send out people to all these hearings. Judge Alan Shankman has addressed our group a couple of times now, has, to his credit, been trying to move the caseload in Westchester County. And something like that was a third or quarter of all the cases in Westchester County in the 9th District are tax cert cases. So he's trying to move them fast, trying to encourage settlements. And in this economic climate, that's really hitting the municipalities and probably the county hard, because if he's encouraging settlements now, we've got to pay it this year. So, you know, we all want to clear this, we all want to solve this problem. And again, there are a couple of things on the centralized commercial database that we're still working out the kinks with the assessors, but we hope to be back to you probably within a month, right?
Well, hopefully within a month, but it may take a little longer. We have some different ideas as to how we want to approach this and how much input we want to get on this before we actually submit a document. We wouldn't. There are different opinions, I'll say that way. We'll see exactly how we end up.
Great. Thank you. Members. Mr. Hart.
What has been the buy-in from the municipalities? I know when we started this, the goal was to get kind of buy-in because, you know, as we all know, this is the third rail of politics and government. And the thought was that if we were all in it together from the ground up, you know, maybe we could get buy-in and consensus.
In a month.
Are the municipalities really on board and buying into this, or are they just saying, okay, yeah, this is good, and then we're just going to have another report on the shelf?
I think that once we get the data, municipalities will be hard-pressed not to use it. Number one, the largest cost of the reval is going to be gathering the data, so if that is gathered, it's there. Secondly, you know, all it's going to take is one taxpayer to bring a suit to say, you mean you have the data and you're not using it, before we're all on board, whether we want to be or not. And maybe that's what some legislators want, so they don't have to take that tough vote.
Thank you.
Stay on that for a minute. So we're paying for the gathering of the data.
First,
right?
We, as far as the gathering of the data is concerned, at this point in time, the county has contracted to make sure provide photography
right
to each municipality. Beyond that, there is no commitment on the county's behalf or really anyone's behalf for that matter. As far as the gathering of data is concerned, there's a understanding that it's obvious to me, from a professional point of view, that if you give someone data that's going to help them, meaning photography in this case,
is that the big nut? Them. Is usually the photography?
Or well, photography is a piece. It's a, I would say, a cost-effective piece of data that all municipal assessors can use and helps them to, at a minimum, support cases. Ideally, they're going to use that to make sure they have computerized inventory, computerized data for every parcel.
And then they could do the reval?
Yes.
And is there cost associated with, what is the cost associated with the next step once you've said to all your municipalities,
that is,
okay,
that
you've
is
got
highly
your
dependent upon exactly what approach we take. Now it's a matter of if we take the approach that we're going to, the photography's there, everybody's going to use it, the company's going to be actively involved in reviewing the data and helping us make sure we have the most pristine data possible, then the cost is much lower than it would be if we say, okay, fine, which I don't expect. The photography's on the shelf, it's there, we give it to the vendor, you do the work with 40-year-old record cards that differ between the 25 municipalities. That's a radically different cost. So it all depends on where we end up. So I would defer until we get this, at least this report, close to the finalization to get it. But to give you some numbers, I think minimum that I've heard from the vendors is to the tune of $150 per property is what it would cost. We know that in the village of Bronxville, they spent close to $300 a property. So you're talking, you know, but then again, you're talking about economies of scale and other things. So that's just the ballpark range that's being discussed. And vendors are not going to give us their best cards in preliminary discussion.
Right.
So I can't really give you something firm to hang your hat on at this point.
Can I ask one further question
okay,
on this? I seem to have read about, I don't remember where it was, challenges to the photography in other counties, residential challenges, challenging things that looked like swimming pools but weren't, or something, or they banned the photography. Something happened recently in some.
Oh no, they were using Google Earth to determine if people were complying with code.
Yeah.
Fences around pools, that kind of stuff.
That's what it was, and they agreed not to do it anymore because it was an invasion of privacy, they thought. I mean, are we Do we know anything from other counties and municipalities' experiences with this whole process, what we potentially are facing in terms of a backlash from municipalities?
Well, there's always a situation where one individual or group of individuals decides that something may not be in their best interest. So that can always occur, but I can just tell you from what I know from hearing from my peers in New York State and around the country is that, for the most part, everyone already acknowledges the fact that you can go to several websites and see this data, maybe not to the same quality as we're getting, and I'm 100% sure it's not going to be to the same quality and the same types of tools that we will have available, but you know, you can go right to a website right now and see most of the information, you know, maybe, again, not to the same quality that we will have, so I don't know how much more of a better answer I can give you than that.
Thank you.
I can speak from later.
I'd like to acknowledge the arrival of Mr. Gatta as a member of the CAC, and the legislator Rogowski as a member of the committee. Go ahead, Al.
I can speak for personal experience on that over the last two decades. One was in a city which is known as number one in the defense of civil rights. We did not do aerial photography because the technology did not exist at the time. But what we did do is street level photography, and it was even more an action where people would become frightened or scared, because the way we had to do it in those days is we had to have a truck go down every street with a little camera on top, and it would stop and it would take photographs. Now, I couldn't get you the oblique angle, but it got you, you know, some of everything else, a lot of everything else. And we did have complaints, but we handled them. We didn't see any invasion of privacy, and the city of one of the cities I worked for at the time, which is known as, you know, very civil rights. As a matter of fact, it was called the Socialist Republic of the Midwest. It was Ann Arbor, Michigan. They understood the need for it and the need to achieve accurate property data to reach this plateau that I don't know if we ever reached, called equity and fairness.
It was a one-day story when Yonkers did the aerial photography last year. But, you know, people weren't up in arms.
And you should also note, from an assessment perspective, the State Office of Real Property Tax Services basically authorizes collection of data from the street right of way. So anything from the public right of way is theoretically fair game.
Mr. Rogowski.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm sorry I missed the first couple of minutes. Good morning, everybody. I guess we've all been in Westchester for a while. Many of us are homeowners. We all have our own connection to this process. And I guess what's just frustrating me, I mean, there may not be a lot of to benefit to kind of look backwards. We're trying to go forwards, and we're trying to, you know, improve the system. But it does seem to me, I feel I do need to say, that does boil down at the end of the day. You look at Westchester County, certainly many municipalities inside Westchester, we're just doing things differently than the rest of the state, the rest of the country. And so, whereas to go forward, I certainly support the county assistance and trying to get this going, it does bother me that even in Westchester, some municipalities, a Pelham, a Rye Town, can figure out how to do it, because it's no rocket science. It's really leadership. My hometown of Harrison, 50 years, haven't reassessed.
1938.
And so what's that, 70 years? Many municipalities, 50, 60, 70 years, and they're waiting for the county to help them? I mean, what, you know, we're here in 2010, and we're, you know, trying to do what we can, but let's make sure we understand here that we're, you know, some issues we really do have to work on and really move the ball forward. This is a situation where we shouldn't be sitting here talking about this. It isn't, you know, and Chuck's here for Yonkers, but, you know, the Yonkers, the Mount Vernons, the Harrisons, where are they? Do it. Why are they, since, waiting for somehow us to do it? And let's, you know, there's certain politics. There's a lot of politics, obviously, but that's not necessarily a good reason, a good justification, in my view, for not doing it. It's easy to sit here and say that if you're a supervisor or mayor of a locality, so maybe a little tougher, but some have done it. Around the state and around the country, it's been done. It's either a question of localities don't want to spend the money on their own and waiting for someone else to help out, But if so many other places in the country could do it, and either spend the money, have the leadership, it's just trouble. It just bothers me that we will do what we can, but let's not hide the fact that our localities just aren't doing it.
For all kinds of reasons,
they're not doing it.
Number one, some localities are starting.
Because you have to.
Right.
You simply have to.
And in Yonkers, the debate around the city council was not whether to do it, but whether or not to do it with the county or leave on our own.
Well,
and since a quarter of the taxpayers' money goes to the county, there was some feeling on the council that it should be uniform and that we shouldn't have a different vendor than Bronxville or Scarsdale, and that there should be some relationship with the characteristics. That's part of what's
Chuck, you're right. No, that's certainly a role we can play. Listen, Rye Town went out and took the pictures. Yonkers took the pictures.
Right.
Made that decision and went out and did it. Because they're just a little ahead of the curve. I mean, sure, if we did it, it's cost efficiency scale.
Yonkers is ahead of the curve. I'd like to hear that. Yeah. Usually we won't say it often,
but on this issue, since our chairman's not here. But Rye Town, Yonkers took some steps. But again, the big picture, Rye Town and Yonkers could have done it 15 years ago. I look at Harrison and the other. So I'm saying we're here. We want to help. Government's here to help. We're going to try to, for the economy of scales and the efficiencies. Don't forget, there's a department of assessment. I think it's still in the charter. And, one might talk about the carrots and the stick. And what would happen if the county were to say, because we do see the value, as we all see the value of doing this, but if you don't do it by a certain period of time, maybe it's time. We talk about consolidation, shared services. Maybe it's time for the county to step in and say, if localities don't do it by 2013 or pick a date, you know what? We mobilize that county department of assessment and I don't know if we fought, but we'll do it, whatever the law allow us, we have to get state legislation, because we're all, on behalf of our constituents who pay the taxes, we need that tax fairness. The tax judiciary system, I'm familiar with it, it's reassessment by inequality. Whoever goes in, their assessment goes down and everyone else picks up. So it's not working, obviously, and I guess we're just expressing my frustration when I look around the localities that simply aren't doing it. And, we'll help out, but I just want to put on the record, I'm bothered that most municipalities are waiting. I know, New Rochelle, Mamaroneck, they're talking about it now.
But okay. I just want to point out,
we're trying to cram four items into a short agenda, and we have the Chief of Staff and Mary Mann here. For matters of the housing implementation policy. I appreciate everybody getting their say in, except for Anise, who got in late, and so we acknowledge her here, but she's going to be her usual quiet self, I think.
She lives
Marty,
in one of the forward-thinking areas.
To the next item on the agenda. Go
I
ahead.
Live in a forward-thinking, excuse me, I live in a forward-thinking area, but when we got hit with a 4% tax increase that came to 24% in Yonkers,
Well, that was what my question was going to be, is
terrible.
What do you do with that third
terrible.
That yeah. gets the increase?
Al, pick off the low-hanging
hopefully
fruit.
Hopefully one quick, but what Legislator Rogowski said had two parts. Let me just spend 30 seconds on the first part. You're right. Westchester's different than the west of the world, and sometimes it makes things easier, and sometimes it makes things difficult. Well, it's very difficult in Westchester for the communities to move forward and do this. And what's happening with this commission now, we're looking forward. We're not finished our work yet, but we're looking forward for the leadership in the county to come together somehow. And we're working on that now. In our final report, we will suggest exactly how we would like you to provide the leadership. Some of it may be just plain upfront leadership. Some of it may be a little funding. Some of it may be is the amount of dollars that we will be saving the county. And as that's not like save to spend type of thing, by the way. The county would see the merit and along with its leadership to provide some funds, because the municipalities will. Chuck represents the Municipal Officials Association, and I'm a member of the association. And so far, they're squarely behind this effort. Now it's a third rail, as you said, and we understand that. I think when you see our final report, we will attempt to hit all of the issues you have, I hope, anyway.
Good, thank you. Chuck, you want to wrap things up?
I mean, it's a work in progress, and I'm excited, and I expect it soon. And, you know, to answer Judy's question about what do you do about the third of the people that have to pay more, I mean, to one extent, they've been paying less all these years. But there are programs that other states use, like, for instance, with seniors, where you defer any incremental increase until they sell their home or pass away, and then the estate has to pay it.
Right.
So that, you know, there are ways of keeping their tax burden the same.
Got it. Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming. We really appreciate the update. And members, keep us in mind because it's a work in progress. Thanks very much. Mr. Orris, Mr. Mann.
Thank you for having me here. Thank you for the update. That was helpful. Good.
Oh, there's Trent. He's coming out of the bathroom.
Oh, okay. Thank you very much. Well, you've got a lot of hats.
Hi, Ed.
That's
how
good.
Are you?
Fit. We've got lots of room.
You can just string down the side if you want, George. I know it's unusual.
Mary. Mary should be the head.
Okay. Let's just go in the order in which they're on the agenda. It's a striking departure from the way we usually do things. And let's start with an update on the housing implementation plan, which I know you guys are working hard on, and we very much appreciate. We also very much appreciate your coming here and giving us this first now of a regular series of roughly speaking, twice a month updates. For the record, Mr. Orris?
George Orris, Chief of Staff.
Mary Mann, Senior Assistant to the County Executive.
Ted Burroughs, Acting Commissioner of Planning.
Norma Drummond, Deputy Commissioner of Planning.
Thank you very much. Okay, update.
Okay. It's been just over a year since the stipulation and the order of settlement and dismissal and the ADC litigation. Since January, the current administration has been diligently progressing on two paths to comply with the terms of the stipulation. And in, you know, under broad terms, the document side of it and the development side of it. We, in the past quarter, have been putting additional focus on the outreach effort to potential applicants for the homeownership and rental units that will be developed, and meeting with the partners who are going to assist us in the financing of this, from the housing counseling agencies to other financing partners, which I'll discuss. And we have been, meeting with you more frequently and sharing information, and along with the municipalities and the Westchester Municipal Official Association. So we're, I think, making a significant effort to keep the dialogue and work with our partners. I would say that the communication and working relationship with the monitor and his team at Debevoise continues to be collaborative, collegial, and characterized by substantive, ongoing dialogue. We have made significant strides toward finalizing the implementation plan, and the monitor has said that, you know, I think he's progressed to a point where we expect to hear from him within several weeks. The Pratt team is his housing counselors are evaluating our latest submission, and I think he, from his own words, is beginning to recognize that the absence of finality is beginning to have an impact on the municipalities who are holding back on finalizing or starting the process of making their changes to their own land use ordinances and processes until they have some finality at the county level. And so he has said such things as looking for parts of it that he can finalize, and he keeps the dialogue open on other items. So we don't know at this point exactly how he will approach it, but he certainly put several ideas out there. We had a very positive meeting with Brian Lawler, who is the commissioner of the DHCR in New York State, and New York Homes. He's just collapsed the agencies, he's merged them. And Norma, what is the new name of the agencies?
It's Homes and Community Renewal.
And but to the extent that New York State often partners in financing the housing developments, it was very positive to sit with his senior team and, you know, just exchange where we are and where they are looking at the developments. The economy still encourages, from the developers we talked to, an interest in developing affordable housing. At the same time, Westchester is a strong housing market, and the value of the tax credits apparently has regained strength, and that's very helpful in the financing. I attended with Norma a ribbon cutting up in Peekskill. Some of you may have been there, Legislative Burton. And apparently it was pointed out in the opening remarks that 122 construction jobs were created by building 43 units of, in that case, affordable senior housing in Peekskill. So it's very good for the economy if we can keep moving this forward. And as I alluded to earlier, I think the non-final status of the implementation plan and the programs that are in it, you know, the model ordinance, discretionary funding policy, are you know, discouraging the municipalities who do want to move forward. I think there is an interest in moving forward with us, and until there's finality on that score, they feel it is difficult to do that. And my sort of final comment on that theme is that to the extent we have real projects in the pipeline, delays in finality of decisions, even about what constitutes an eligible unit, can cost a developer money. And as Legislator Harkin knows with AHOM, they have a project which is shared housing, and we haven't gotten final approval. I mean, the monitors team has indicated a significant interest in it for a lot of reasons, but the letter we received said that he didn't really know what the definition of a housing unit was for purposes of the stipulation, which sort of surprised us, because under many of the programs that Norma has administered over the many years, an SRO unit is treated as a housing unit for purposes of funding. So we were surprised. We were invited to submit a definition of a housing unit. We used the HUD definitions, which are of housing, not of housing unit, but reference the programs with citations where they do fund a single unit. We reference the definition of family, which the federal definition is that a single can constitute a family, and we believe a family of a single person should have fair housing choice, and that could include an SRO. And he also invited HUD to submit a definition, and to our surprise, HUD isn't sure what the definition is for purposes of the stipulation. So that's the kind of quagmire we're in, and yet you have a willing, very committed developer who is kind of sitting back here. So we hope through the substantive ongoing dialogue that we can start to move these issues and these interpretive matters quickly, because at the end of the day, real estate development is money and putting money at risk, and you certainly want to encourage developers to feel they can work with the county in this program and get answers. We'll turn it over to my colleague.
Okay, I guess my role here is to talk a little bit about the meetings we've had and the outreach we've had during the first 9 months. We have had 31 meetings with municipal officials, 45 meetings with developers, 5 meetings with financial, actually now this is 6, because this was last week we had one on Friday afternoon, right?
Five meetings with financial entities.
Yeah,
we were working on the program.
10 meetings with technical assistance providers, including realtors and architects. We have submitted to the monitor correspondence relating to 158 potential units that would be eligible, and waiting for word, on many of those. If we get 100% there, we're in good shape. If they're all approved by the monitor, we don't know.
Mm-hmm. George, I'm sorry, does that include the 18 that were just passed?
Yes.
Or is that 100?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so we're down 140. Really.
Okay.
We have an okay on the 18, and we appreciate very much the legislature's quick action with that to get that moving, so with the Edgar Place property.
Rye.
What did I say? All right, I said Edgar Place. Oh, you just want Rye to get the credit. Yes, and Rye actually is before us.
And Rye's legislator.
No, and Rye is before us with another very viable project, so it's.
You have to drive through Portchester to get the Rye.
Not if you come through Mamaroneck.
Enough, you guys. Come on. Give them a chance to finish.
Yeah, we have met with developers on 23 potential sites in 31 of the eligible communities. In the 31 eligible communities.
How many sites?
23.
It's 23 municipalities
of the
33 have sites. Some of them have multiple sites.
Right. Okay. So we still have 9 municipalities that haven't come forward. And we're going to have to address that in some fashion very soon. I just want to talk about, John Nolan he's been hosting a number of roundtables over at Pace Law School, and we were there Friday, and there was a pretty good turnout of elected officials there, town supervisors, mayors, village and city administrators, and there were two representatives there from the monitors team, and I thought it was extremely helpful because some of the frustration they're feeling that Mary alluded to about the long time frame. In fact, it's interesting, Phil Zegarelli asked them if, because it's taken 9 months for the monitor to get back to us on the implementation plan, some of these other things, are we going to get nine additional months to comply with the benchmarks, to which we really didn't get an answer that we liked from the monitor's team. But there is some merit to that type of thing, because there is a sense from some of the municipalities, the village of Scarsdale, the mayor there was talking about the fact that they're in the middle of doing their zoning code, and they're kind of stuck because they're waiting for what is this model ordinance going to look like and what they should include in there. So we're hopeful that Eric and Noel, who were there from the monitors team, will go back and explain that it's not just the team here that's saying, you know, these are real issues, but that our local partners are having the same issue with the delays and the length of but having said that, we'd rather get a positive response if it takes longer as opposed to a quick response that's a no. So some of these questions are a little bit more involved.
I'd like to take a pause. We're technologically kicking in with video conferencing of this meeting.
So oh, I would have put on makeup.
Back of your head, you George. That's all you're getting on the tube.
Oh, it's only the back of my head. You can see that creeping bald spot.
Okay, I want everybody to know that this is going on now.
Okay. Other than that, I don't know that there's, we do, again, when we meet with local officials, we do reach out to the legislator from the municipality to make sure you're included in the process. If we're meeting with a developer, I know some of you have said you'd like to be included. Some of the local officials have said, I guess we're still trying to, you know, some of you may not, it's kind of odd because some of these developers come in. Quite frankly, it's really a pie in the sky type of thing that we don't think is really going to go anywhere. It's only when we see something viable that looks like it has some potential that we would really include the local supervisor, mayor, and the county representative. And I'm very glad that we've got a schedule now every 2 weeks of coming before you. I don't know how much we'll have every 2 weeks, but I do think it's important for us to keep the dialogue open and let all of you know, you know, what we're hearing from the monitor, what we're hearing from our local governments, what we're hearing with anything to do with the settlement itself.
Okay, let me point out that you are now live on television behind you if you'd like to turn around and look at it. And the audience can see it. And the
I have a face for radio, I've been told.
All right, members, Mr. Harkov. Oh, there we are, cool, always. Okay, everybody can see it. Mr. Harkov.
Thank you, and thank you for the update. You know, I guess the concern, Mary, that you alluded to about not getting confirmation on some things to move ahead, I hear a lot of that a lot of developers have things in the works that are stuck. But we also hear that about some items that are not necessarily in settlement communities. So can you just talk about where we are in terms of, like, you know, that whole big spreadsheet we always have and we like to talk about because it's a guidepost for us as where we're going. So eligible, non-eligible, you know, where are we in the pecking order? Are things stuck? Are things not stuck? Just kind of in general.
Well, I think that the administration's focus is clearly on meeting the conditions in terms of the stipulation of settlement. There are grave consequences if we don't meet these benchmarks. So, you know, I think in all candor, and I think we've told this to individual legislators who have projects in various ineligible municipalities, that our focus and our resources are focused on getting this first benchmark done. Now, if we're successful between now and next spring having that first, I always forget the number.
100 units.
Yeah, if you know, I think then we'll take a fresh look at that. But I think right now, we are trying to harbor our resources and hone in on trying to meet this first benchmark. Because we think, quite frankly, and this was alluded to at the conference that John Nolan had, The monitors team feels too, once they get past a few of these first ones and they get accustomed to the questions, a lot of the same questions will come up with future projects, and they will have already done their research and their homework and understand the rationale and the answer. And they're hopeful that going forward, once we get these first four or five projects underway, that they can make, you know, they can opine much quicker and get back to us. And I think that's the feeling we have. We really have been focused, quite frankly, on meeting these benchmarks and making sure that the monitor and federal government and ultimately the judge is looking at this saying, this administration is really making good faith efforts to meet all of the requirements of this stipulation.
Thank you. Mr. Arnn, you have any follow-up?
No, that's it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Myers.
How were you notified of the PACE seminar on Friday?
I don't know. I think we were invited to participate by John Nolan. He asked for our team to come in. He asked for Mary and Kevin and I to come in.
I think it was the last session of a program he's run, mm-hmm. and he invited, the invitation didn't come to me directly, but he invited...
I think came to Kevin and I, and then we suggested that Mary be there as well.
And the municipalities were all invited?
I don't... It's his show. I don't know how he...
I understand he's had a program on...
Well, this is probably part of his leadership
programs.
Yeah.
Right.
But it would be really good if the legislators could...
Well, it wasn't our...
No, I know, but...
You know. So, I mean,
if there was more communication coming from you to us, it would probably be very helpful.
Yeah, well, that's why we're going to meet every 2 weeks.
But, I mean, even in just shooting off a quick email saying, hey, we're going to go over and talk with the monitors people at PACE, you know, any legislators who want to come,
well,
please do.
Well, Judy, it wasn't our forum.
I understand.
And, you know, I mean, that would have been up to Mr. Nolan, Professor Nolan, doctor, whatever he is, to make that decision. He had, you know, he has a certain audience that he invites, and he invited us to participate.
Yes.
So, it wasn't our position to invite other people.
I see.
Up.
But I do think it's probably appropriate that this committee reaches out.
Yeah, it would be part of the problem. I mean, I think you would understand this. We as legislators are in beholden to our constituents,
right,
who ask us questions, and it's very difficult to have to say, we haven't heard anything from the administration, we don't know what they're doing. Since this would work much better if it was a collaborative effort.
I
think
agree.
Everyone agrees
and
to that.
That's why we're going to be meeting every 2 weeks, which is a suggestion that was made several months ago.
Well, it should probably just be an ongoing thing, not even an every 2 weeks kind of thing.
I understand, but it's not
we can help make this flow.
That's fine. Likewise, when you folks meet with the monitor, we'd appreciate hearing about that from you rather than the monitor telling us, by the way, I met with the legislature a week ago and they told me this, that, and the other thing. So it is a two-way street.
Mr. Rogowski.
Yeah, I think they commit to meeting every 2 weeks. I mean, that's how much more can we ask for this? I think you're right. We need that dialogue, but we're getting it every 2 weeks. John Nolan, you have an argument. How come he didn't invite us?
I didn't realize that's beyond the point.
By the way, or your mayor or supervisor, because they were there. I mean, there were a lot of them there.
So I don't think you can complain to me, because, you know, I think you've got to take that with Nolan.
I think we're all one big family here.
Yeah. Well, different roles.
Well, let's put it this way. If the League of Women Voters, you know, you can't, it's somebody else's forum show. He hosted it on his turf. Just a protocol I've always had, even as a legislator, if I was invited to participate in somebody's program, I didn't take it upon myself to invite other people to their program.
Judy, how come the mayors or the supervisors of your districts or the legislators, mm-hmm. that are going to get the questions that you're talking about, why didn't they inform you as a legislator, we are having a meeting, okay? We want you to be aware of it, and then you would know if you
right.
were
yeah.
to
this
invite
is true.
Yourself.
This is true.
Mr. Chairman, I do have a concern. You know, listen, we're trying to work with the ninth floor, but, you know, the question of the policies on affordable housing, mm-hmm. when we went through this last year, at least the prior administration had made a commitment that notwithstanding the dollars, we've already bonded like, what, $20 million towards this housing program? Notwithstanding all the resources we had to put towards there, the county still has an interest in affordable housing, across the board. And so I certainly appreciate spending the time and the money and your focus, as you said, on trying to implement the stipulation, working with the monitor, that, and you have to do that. But if there are, I'm here, if there are developers sort of kind of waiting, you know, is this eligible? Will this, you know, fall under that? I have, you know, for me, and I would hopefully as we get into the budget season, you know, and if you're looking for resources, if there are projects lining up in a potential pipeline, but they're waiting to see if they're eligible or they're being told, you know, our focus is over here, I, for one, you know, representing this one community that, that is non-eligible, but looking at, you could talk about it, jobs, economic development, you know, bringing housing to people in Westchester, I would hope that the administration would take a second look at maybe just dollars. At the end of the day, you know, bonding additional funds, not taking your focus or your effort to meet with the monitor and get the stipulation done, obviously that's, but if there's one or two or 15 developers here, and either they're being told or the dollars, well, you know, we have to see if you can be eligible. And so as you said, you testify, you know, they're waiting, they're not sure. Geez, I mean, I think we, as we get into our, you know, the budget season, our priorities, we to setting policies, we may want to decide to make a policy. Geez, housing is important, economic development, jobs, and we would like to see if there are developers coming in, what's the roadblock? If it's, and if it's simply, well, we need $3 million of whatever, you know, of assistance. So again, I don't accept the new administration's, you know, we're now gonna have to focus, and not just time or effort, but resources, and all of our resources in these 31 communities, 31 or 33, whatever it is.
31.
So I'm just saying, I'm hoping we can, you know, together come to some understandings of, are there some resources left over? If they're projects, I mean, real projects, developers sitting there, they're ready to go, but they need some assistance, that they wouldn't be told, well, get the end of the line because we got to do this for the next 7 years. So I hope we'll, you know, work on that.
Excuse me.
With the administration.
Is that a yes, George?
No, I don't think he asked a question. He made a statement, so I duly noted.
Do you want to convert it to a statement?
No, no, I just...
That was a question. Okay, fine. Ms. Speckle.
To add to your what you're saying, there have been projects in the pipeline for 5 years and 3 years for people waiting to, you know, have projects done like Yonkers or New Rochelle or Mount Vernon, and we're told the same thing. There is no money. We're concentrating on this and we can't do that. And those people are kind of frustrated also when they've been waiting for 5 years.
Well, we'll work on the budget.
Fine. Any other members? If not, thank you very much. George, we will, of course, be taking you up on the twice a month meetings.
Yeah.
And staff will be in touch with you.
Yeah, I think we've already scheduled the next two dates.
Right. Okay, that's true. Yeah. I would like to raise one other question. We had, the last time Mary was here, we had raised the question of the analysis of impediments and the consultant. We would like to speak with a person in the same room. How is that going in terms of getting a person here?
I brought your request to Kevin and... And you know, I think he'd like to speak to you about it.
Okay, then we'll talk later on.
Administration, I should say more
formally. Yes, fully understood what you meant.
You have another matter that you wanted to discuss about the DSS.
Well, we'd like to talk about the DSS Section 8 move, and if we can do that, if you're prepared to discuss that matter.
That's what I'm
saying. Okay, go ahead.
We can address this very quickly. I think the first formal meeting between planning and DSS occurred yesterday or the day before.
Yesterday.
Norma met with Commissioner Grant, and as with a lot of these things where it looks so simple to just... Mitchell. Grant is this it's the TV cameras that got me nervous. It's not as simple as you first, at first blush, it appears that we could just make this consolidation, this go away. So it's still a work in progress, and we're looking at other alternatives as well in terms of sectioning. So, Norma, do you have an idea when we might be able to come to some kind of recommendation?
I would think by the end of this month, because if the planning department will not be the administrator next year,
we
need to give the state 60 days notice.
Okay, you need to give the state.
Can I ask a question?
So that would be the end of this month.
Go ahead. We're going to make another technological leap forward, and there's going to be a phone call coming in from one of the legislators. So go ahead, Marty, get it in fast before he dominates the whole thing.
So I mentioned any names. Just a quick way. The 12 or 13 offices at
15.
So just a broad question.
if and when you make this consolidate, is it simply moving those 15 under the DSS umbrella, or is there more substantive change?
We're having strictly the Section 8 administration that's now currently under the planning department, the 4,700 plus vouchers, moving that under from planning under DSS.
Okay, so just moving that. So everything else sort of stays the same. It's just moving administratively. Okay,
right. Right, but there are other alternatives too. Yeah,
well, well, that's why I said if you're going to do a move like this, I don't know what the all could be, but potentially there are several.
It's interesting having sat over here as a legislator. It always seems so simple that you could just take this and put it there. But you know, when you start to get some nuts and bolts of it, with federal and state mandates and requirements, with lost grant opportunities if you put something here as opposed to there, with civil service and union requirements, it's not like you know, like running your own private office where I could say, Mr. X, today you're going to take over Mr. Y's responses. It just doesn't happen that quickly, unfortunately.
Okay, Mr. Jenkins, are you on the phone now? Apparently he's on a cell phone. This is two leaps forward. Apparently one further than we can handle. Do we have any chance on picking this up, Steve, or not?
Sorry?
Do we have any chance of picking Ken up on the phone or not?
No, I'm here.
Oh, you're here. Okay, fire away. Ken, the space is yours. Legislator Jenkins from Yonkers, chairman of the board. We hear you. Sort of.
We don't have any people in there to even do it.
No, I'm just listening for right now.
Okay, well, we're just finishing up with the Section 8 issue.
I'll stop talking about Yonkers, Ken.
I won't let her. The end part of what Mr. Oros was just referring to as far as moving the office, and certainly that was a concern that was brought up, and with the federal and the grants, et cetera. So I didn't hear the beginning part of it, so I apologize for acting like another legislator that may ask questions that they weren't there on time for. So,
duly noted, Mr. Chairman.
if you could just, from the point of potentially placing in one place versus the other, in keeping it in planning or moving in DSS, Ms. Orr, has the administration have a different recommendation as opposed to just leaving it in planning where all the expertise for all the housing programs are?
We haven't reached a conclusion yet. The first meeting between DSS and planning was yesterday to discuss it. And at first blush, we thought that's what we would do, simply just move it over to DSS. But after looking at it, we're not sure that's the proper way to go. And we're exploring alternatives, including simply keeping it where it is.
That's fair. Is there any negative impact as far as if we move, and I apologize, you already answered this, if you move the office and you all are analyzing it, are there other impacts that the county might lose control over the program itself? Because that would be a big concern.
I think you're best off to answer that.
Recognizing that the county's contract with New York State is specific to the Department of Planning, any change to that local administration would be subject to the state. So whether if DSS is in a position to accept the program, it is subject to the state's interest in allowing that change. Otherwise, the state could pursue a totally outside vendor if they decided that was in their better interest.
Okay, and that would be, I guess, a concern, I guess, from the county altogether. Given the experience that we had going through and meeting with the Section 8 organizers and the 13 different entities in Westchester County, the county being the largest holder of certificates, that would be a concern because I guess it would have to go out to RFP, and if it went out to RFP, we could get the company from Florida that's managing. We certainly could get another great agency that we have in Westchester County doing it, but there would be no guarantee of that, and that would be a concern, and I hope that the administration takes that in consideration in doing the deliberation for that particular thing.
We will.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that, and I know that we were exploring it, and that's not part of this discussion, but we certainly were exploring, doing some formalization, and after, George, that the administration goes through its first kind of rounds of iterations on it, maybe we can have have a discussion in HPO about the thoughts about having like that whole housing area where all the housing stuff, whether it's stipulation requirements or Section 8 or HUD grants and all that other kind of thing, is memorialized in a department, and whether we need to do that, Charter Act, local law kind of thing, or the administration thinks that that's the right thing to do, we should kind of go through that conversation so that we can do what's best and most cost effective.
We're willing to have a conversation, but I think we're looking to eliminate and consolidate departments rather than make new ones.
It actually wouldn't be making a new one, and I agree with that. I think that all of us, in the proposal on the document, it was that we would create an entity, and that entity could reside in a current department, and making sure that we had all the appropriate staff and personnel to make sure we would be able to exercise our obligation, and especially given the our stipulation and all those other kind of things, it may not be a bad idea to have all that stuff housed in a place with a different level of visibility, but inside of an existing department. Because I don't think any of us are thinking about creating new departments as opposed to making sure that we're identifying areas that everyone agrees that is necessary to have.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Harkham.
Just very quick question. Follow-up to Ms. Drummond's point about if we were to shift it from planning to DSS, the state would have to sign off, essentially. Are there examples anywhere else in the state where counties have made a shift and the state has said, that's okay, it's just an org chart shift?
What did you tell me yesterday? You told us.
The of the 47 counties that New York State uses or covers with the Section 8 program, only five of their contracts are with local government entities, including counties. They did allow a switch in Livingston County from the Planning Department to the Department of Social Services. Unfortunately, it was not necessarily positive. A year later, Livingston County requested that it actually return from Social Services back to the Planning Department. We couldn't understand exactly why, what the issue was. Our sense in calling the Livingston County folks was that it had to do with the lack of management and oversight appropriate to what it needed in the Department of Social Services. So that was what.
But there's precedent for the state to approve a lateral move like that.
Correct.
Okay. Thanks. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you, George and Mary, for coming. We look forward to seeing you in a couple of weeks, and this will be an ongoing series of meetings.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you.
Mr. Lafayette, Mr. Colty, if you can join us, please. Find them.
Yeah.
Now, George, you're supposed to say hi, Mom.
Oh,
I'm
going to Disney.
Thanks, Ed.
Yeah. How are you?
Good morning.
Morning.
Recognize, commissioners, that you're on live television, being beamed throughout the world to seven continents and at least one viewer. For the record, if you'd tell us your names and your positions.
Commissioner Colty, Board of Elections, Republican Commissioner.
Reginald Lafayette, Democratic Commissioner, Board of Elections.
Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you for having me.
Several of us recall that there was a primary election a couple of weeks ago, and it was the first time that the paper ballot system had been used in this county. There had been a number of, shall we say, broadly insufficiently sourced complaints raised, and you also have undertaken something that this county has never done before, at least in living memory, which is a switch in technology from one system to another. So we wanted to ask you to come in and give us an update on how you think it went, what changes you think you would need to do, and whether you're happy with the state of affairs. So either one of you, if you go ahead and give us a general report. We have to be out of here by 11 because we have a successor committee. It is now 10:27. So I'm going to ask everybody to let these gentlemen finish their remarks, and then we'll ask relatively short series of questions. Go ahead.
All right, I'll start. Being a new commissioner, working at the Board of Elections for about a year, most of the decisions were made prior to my starting at the Board of Elections. My assessment of what's going on with the new machines is that there's an attempt to take the electoral process into the 21st century by the use of new technologies. That being said, there's also, under New York State law, a lot of guidelines and procedures in place to retain paper trail. What I've seen this past cycle here in Westchester, the deficiencies, I think, are with the election night reporting. More can be done to utilize technology. We have to eliminate the human component of having election inspectors report on election night by telephone, reading a tape that comes, a printout that comes out of the voting machine. It's very similar to a cash register tape. The voting machines do have two memory chips in them. One can be used for unofficial reporting, election night reporting. I've spoken to the vendors who have sold us the machines. What we're looking to do is totally automate the election night reporting process by eliminating the inspectors from calling in to the Board of Elections, eliminate the process where those numbers are then written down, typed into a computer, and uploaded to our website. What we're looking to do is take the memory cards, get either a regional network of points where they can be dropped off at, either county clerk's offices, or have a north, have four regional satellite offices set up for election night, where these memory cards come in, are uploaded into our databases, and then uploaded automatically to the website. This would eliminate a lot of the hand counting and I would say the discrepancies that are being put out to the public on election night. And I think it would speed up the process. Some counties elected to do that, some didn't. I think when we meet with the other commissioners from the other counties, I think we're going to exchange ideas and streamline a lot of these processes. There are also ballot counting processes in place. We have our own unique situation in Westchester because the machines are stored at one location and our processing and ballot counting, absentee emergencies are processed at another location. I think we have to develop our own internal system of expediting and speeding up that process. But given the fact that Westchester has 74 employees at the Board of Elections, we're a very large county, the other larger counties that had to use these same machines on election days, from what I'm hearing, have over 100 employees. Nassau County has 144 employees, and pretty much did the same operation. There's only five towns in Nassau County. Westchester has 20 towns, five cities, and 20 villages. So I think we did quite well. In comparison, the complaint ratio was slightly elevated over prior years when we were using the mechanical machines. In comparison to the complaints that were taken in New York City and other counties. I think Westchester did quite well. I think the process is working and it just needs some fine-tuning and we have to visit all of the policies, procedures, and technologies that are available to us.
Mr. Lafayette, do you have some additional remarks?
Yes, Commissioner Coulter covered quite a bit of it. But the overwhelming part of this is that we're dealing with paper. We have 600,000 registered voters in Westchester. The system changed completely. We are now centralized. As you know, we had the help of the clerks and deputy clerks in all the municipalities and the inspectors, not the inspectors, the technicians were in each municipality, two inspectors, two technicians, I keep saying inspectors, which meant when the board was not centralized, we were operating with about 175 employees at an election cycle, 100
between 170 and 175. It's pretty interesting. When we got centralized, we only operated with 74 employees. So we lost 100 employees. And it became a great handicap. The bags that you see at the polling place, which goes out with all the supplies, used to be set down, picked up by the local clerks. And along with the machines, the technicians, down at the clerk area, there were some materials they would put in the bag, mainly food, at the board, some other materials down there. The bags were supervised, we would send materials under the local clerk, along with the moving companies, and the technician going out to the polling place. We're doing all that from Westchester, and it's almost totally impossible. We had a lot of mix-up with bags, but beyond that, because of the paper, the first time you had like live ballots, not just emergency ballots. And we had a primary with the Republican, the conservative in some areas, and the Democrats, countywide, which means you had different packs of ballot. The regular English-speaking ballot, the Spanish-speaking ballot, which was in green for the Democrat, pink for the Republican, and I'll say blue, I don't remember the other color, for the conservative. These inspectors, who were used to being a little comfortable by the old system, had to separate all this stuff. We went on a lot of bogus calls. I did about six of them myself, and you probably heard about it from people that they were bogus. But it said, we didn't send any English-speaking ballots. They didn't take them out of the bag. So, it's two green packs. They took one out, took the other to spares. I'm bringing these up because these are very important things, because here it comes in with supplying the materials and removing it. We do a constant inspector training throughout the year because we have to keep on our system about 11,000 names of folks who can work as inspectors to come up with on election day. We will probably employ about 5,800 to 6,000. I don't think a lot of folks realize that. They don't realize that we are 1,033 election district in Westchester County. The law requires a minimum of four inspector per election district. That's 4,000. That's 4,060-something right there. 4,000. Plus, in bigger areas, clerks, plus coordinators, folks that you see standing there with a little pad-held computer to tell you what election district that you go to. On top of this now, we are faced with these paper ballots, these new machines, and Doug is right, it's taken us in a different area. But those who were here before know that I said that this was going too fast. That before you could take us into a different area, you have to have the manpower. And you have to have the people able to work on it. And it didn't catch up with each other. We were mandated by the state, and in some cases, I hate to say, by people who've never ran elections. What looked good on paper was totally impossible to keep up. The rules that we had to follow, as well as the complaint from the inspectors. You're talking about folks who are doing this one day out of a year, possibly 2 days out of a year, if there's a primary and a general election, and now they have all these paperwork to fill out. It's not realistic. As one inspector said to me, it takes a half an hour just to do the paperwork before they could start what we used to require, taking the numbers down. The numbers still come out of the machine on the tape, and that's our calling. Now the reason, a very important reason, that I've been doing this for over 25 years, as a clerk on the other end, it's 15 years, and here it's 10 years. And I know under the old system, when the inspectors, the captains, had to take the key and turn them over to the local clerk's office, at least in my office, we had two or three people assigned to check, and you see, we were still missing keys for a couple of days to locate. Now, computer chips, which Deb's talking about, we just didn't feel comfortable having the inspectors break the seal and take out the computer chips, about this big, and having them transported back to us. Now, there were counties, Nassau County Commissioner, which we talked to, they had their chips taken out by the inspectors, dropped off at the local precinct, and brought into the county main office, the Board of Elections, to download it on the system at a cost of $1 million in overtime. But at what process? Chip coming out has to come in secured by a Democrat and a Republican, not just by one person, or, I guess in their case, by a law enforcement person, you know, the politician. So, if we had trouble receiving keys or getting just numbers, we couldn't risk it with having the chips. So our numbers came out a little slower because we wanted to be a little safer. It is just too many paper. We were understaffed. We are going to ask for additional help. We realized that we need a warehouse personnel, because when we took the folks from the office to go out over to help pack bags, then the office was depleted. So then that work fell behind. So when they came back to the office, then the bags fell behind. And we had this vicious cycle of bouncing back and forth and dealing with the demands of the public of wanting certain things that were in the office. So, as I said, if it took us, without this new machine, over 150 employees to operate an election on election day, just to operate the administration, not counting at the polling place, then we're going to have to ask for maybe an additional 50 employees in some season. Nassau County has 140 full-time employees, plus 23 seasonal. They operate with 163. Suffolk has 123 full-time employees and about 20 to 15 seasonals. They operate with close to 140. They have, one has about 800,000 voters, the other about 700,000. We have 600,000 and widely spread. We did the best we could. We adhered to cut the budget, keep down that, or whatever. This is the price you pay for. You're going to pay one way or the other. One thing for sure, we know at the Board of Election, a court case costs an average between the attorneys, the commissioners, and the deputy and the staff about $1 million. And $500,000 in employees tied up just to do a single court case, plus the attorneys, plus us just sitting around waiting until the court case is over. And some of you who have witnessed this process know that it becomes very tedious, and now we have compound that with this paper. We have to give an account for all the ballots. There are things that happen during the election that can only be found out as it got out there. We bought the pens that were suggested to us to make sure the circles were darkened and over the proper name or space. And since it was never used, when it was used, we found out that it leaks to the other side.
And on your hands.
Which then could cause some erroneous marks on the ballot, which the machine will kick out and says, unidentifiable marks, which then, by election law, that person is required to be able to get another ballot if it doesn't work. So incidentally, we have to print an average of 3 ballots per voter. So we're constantly with ballots and constantly spending at $1 a ballot about, what is it, $3 million? $2 million plus just ballots. And some of them will go unused, but that's the law. We also the issue of privacy with the privacy booth. We're comfortable that the privacy booth does require privacy, because the space at the privacy booth is supposed to be from the inspectors does require privacy, but there's one factor that's lost here. Not every polling place is in a gymnasium. Hmm. We have a problem with polling places in Westchester. We have about a staff of four who spend half of the year looking for polling places. We have to keep them contiguous by law, keep them set up. Now we come with this new privacy booth. It was one factor, again, that was in factored into this. Who's going to put the privacy booth up? The four senior citizens at the polling places? Or do we have to hire extra personnel just to go out and put up the privacy booth? As we found out, because we found out later today, some wasn't put up because the inspectors said they couldn't get them up. And of course, we can't leave them up all year round because we do not own the polling places. There are local churches, synagogues, schools, lobby of buildings. And then we come back with the storage of it. We just got a warehouse that should have accommodated us that's already too small now. And we haven't completely moved in yet. So this is the Help America Vote Act. My personal opinion, I say it out openly, I say it to the assembly, this is one of the most costly acts that I don't think, in my experience, I don't know, that you could bring the price down. I just don't see how. It's a cost. And Doug is into technology, and a lot of things he's saying is absolutely right. It will get the number out faster. You will like it, the public will like it, but it will cost.
Yeah. I don't think these machines last 2 years. I think this is the first step into automating elections. I think in 2 years there'll be a better model, a better system that the state will adopt. I believe we'll be into the touchscreen voting, maybe with electronic PDF file backup instead of paper trails. But the only way we can reduce cost is to fully automate and leave the paper trail behind. Maybe that's some type of electronic trail. PDF trails are being used in other parts of the country. HAVA doesn't require a paper trail. This is something the New York State Legislature has dropped on us. And I think once everyone starts getting the bills, we'll have to move on from this.
And the paper trail caused more problems. These machines and being built with this tape in it was only after we did the mandatory testing, where we brought 100 folks in from the public to test the machines and sort of like a walk-up election at the warehouse, that we found that the tape in the machine, in some cases, is not large enough to hold the information off of the machine, which means it required changing the tape, whether at the end of the day at a certain point, which then brings into another problem. If you don't change it correctly, or when we were, if it's jamming or coming out, then the machine is shut down until we can get a technician out there if the inspectors can't change it. The machines that we use for the disabled, handicapped, or whatever, there's only two places that use this machine. That's New York and a town and a city in Canada. So we put restrictions on ourselves that basically it's not.
Commissioner, we're getting too much bad news from you. I'm going to turn to the legislators.
We got no good news.
I don't want to hear anymore.
The good news is we got the election off.
Legislator Jenkins, let's go.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple things. One is, thanks for Doug and Commissioner Corsi, Commissioner Lafayette for coming and giving us their view of how things went. And my understanding from you all is, well, that yours was one of the best, by the way, right? Which is scary, right? But the reason that I know that I was one of the people that asked for us to have this discussion was because it was clear, at least from what we saw and heard and fed back, was that some of the budget choices that we made on the board, as far as training, et cetera, had negative impact based on when things really ran. Because this was the first time that not only did you have new machines, which would have been just bad enough by itself, in a change, in a technology change, but you also had, it was the first time you all had the whole operation running yourself, and as you said, the 100 people, I heard you say that earlier. What things do we need to do between now and Election Day to help assist you all from either training and being able to do additional training to develop the people on site, whether they're the coordinators, because we know we have to, from another federal mandate that we have to have the bilingual people there that you all smartly, I think, by the way, have used as the traffic cops, the coordinators. They have to ask Ed, right? And they do the coordination. What other things do we need to do to get them to be the Rambo of the technology, to be able to have the skill set necessary? That's one. The second thing is, do we need to change the hours that we pay people? Because right now, as you mentioned, they're saying it takes 30 minutes to set up and 30 minutes to break down. If they're supposed to be there, if everything's supposed to be live and kicking at 6 o'clock in the morning, right, and we're paying people from 6 o'clock in the morning, I don't know, for some reason, I think that people may be sauntering in late, et cetera. We had a few reports of that as well. So what other things can we do on those things?
Our instructions is, we don't pay them from 6. They have to be there at 5:30 in the morning. So they can be set up and running at 6. That's in our training, and anyone who went to the inspector training is, you report, we're in our office here at 5 in the morning. And all inspectors, clerks, Plan B folks, coordinators are to be at the polling place at 5:30 in the morning, and which gives you a half an hour to get things up and running. And under normal circumstances, if the technicians are in the same municipality, it gives time, as I say from my experience when I was a clerk, folks to run around and help assist in polling place that are stuck. Quite naturally, we have a problem in primary time is one of the bigger problems, because we have folks sign up to work for the money and then don't show up. I don't call us, and we find out at 6 or 5:45 or whatever that people are not showing up at their polling place. And then by law, we have to make some adjustments. So in that, we have folks who come in also in the general election, and we had some in the primary that we use as spares. They come in and they sit at the Board of Elections up in one of the conference rooms, so that we could then shuffle them off to places that inspectors didn't show up. And the law did change where folks could work a half a day. Right. Okay. We have to figure into that, because then we have, and again, like I said, when these laws are changed, and you will appreciate what I think, you have this chain of custody when something goes wrong. So when you open up the polling place, you sign off that you have did all these checks, et cetera, and it's right there. When you close the polling place, you sign off, et cetera. Now you will have, at a certain period, someone's going home, someone else coming in, and then being the public the way it is, you have certain accusations made, and we have to then go back to see in what time frame or who this happened. And so, but we're working on that and trying to get that. The pay, pay $2.25 a day. It may sound like a lot, but maybe if it's a little higher, you can attract some younger college folks who are out for the day or take off that, you know, it's with this process. Board of Legislators, you did something, you know, you did a lot of things good for us. You did one thing that's particularly good when you allow Carolee and I to purchase the ASCED, which the ASCED is the computer with the coordinator used to You could put it in it, and it's both Spanish and English. You come in and give your name and your birth date, and they could pull you up and tell you where you're supposed to be to vote. That helps out a great deal, but because it cut down on our affidavits of people being in the wrong polling place, the wrong district. So that was a tremendous help, and that's the folks you see with the orange jacket who we assigned other things for them to do. It's a work in progress. So those two things were sort of, sorry about that, we thought we cut it off.
Okay, Ms. Breckman.
Only a test, please.
No questions. Mr. Rakowski.
Yes, thank you. Just a couple of questions, Commissioners, on this. I'm a little concerned about the paper ballot. It seems to me these ballots were manufactured for this particular purpose. I mean, ultimately the use was. So when this was by the procurement process, these ballots, and maybe not just Westchester, wherever these ballots were used, I assume they were buying off a state contract. And now we're hearing they bled through with this. I mean, is someone following up? I mean, the specifications for the paper,
the pen,
that went into this.
Yes, the pen bled through and with the ballots. And
but,
remember,
yeah, I don't doubt it happened. Yeah. I'm sitting here thinking when the specs were drawn and the paper was, procured to then be printed on. But we're talking about the paper, it bled through the paper. Either someone, first of all, was this a state contract? Did Westchester buy off a state contract? How do we get these ballots? Do you know who actually procured them?
The bill is on my desk. I did contact the vendor. There were issues with vendors that I'm addressing one at a time and trying to get.
You're putting my legal.
But on ballots, we were told by the vendor that it had to be a 100-pound paper, mm-hmm. which is a heavy paper. Right. And when they were shipped, we did have some issues with packaging and some of them were mixed up, but we had to put labor on that to sort that out. But our ballots were ordered by the vendor of the machine to someone through an OGS contract or a state contract.
They had to beat state regulations.
Yeah, well,
it was set up by the state in terms of the weight of the ballot, et cetera, et cetera.
But so obviously it was full. I mean, something went wrong, right?
We're addressing that.
We're oversight committee. It seems to me either our county attorney or our procurement officer, someone, on your behalf, maybe follow up what happened if now for the general election we're using the same ballots. I mean, do we know that
we're going back, and we're not just the only county.
Well, yeah,
we're going back and even to the manufacturer. Well, now, could have been,
to answer your question, I did speak to the county attorney about that.
Mm-hmm. I think maybe something
for credit.
Right, okay, good.
Get refunds for services and.
Yeah, and hopefully the ballots for the general election have to be printed on different stock.
I haven't tested the paper yet. I'm having someone test it.
Okay, well, I think
it is 100.
As soon as this is certified, and we're starting up for November, which we're in the process of now, along with the state, we're addressing all of that.
Okay, good.
We're even addressing using a different type pen.
Okay, the manufacturer of the machine should go. Okay, next. My next question, that's fine, but that's good, because that should be followed
up. It's improper.
Okay.
All that
and another question, and this may have been discussed over the years. I know there's certain state laws involved in size of EDs, but given all the circumstances you talked about, number of inspectors, the machines, is there any thought being given to consolidating the number of election districts? I know it gets tricky, and it's town by town, city by city. And once you hit 1,000 voters, you're supposed to create another ED. But can those EDs... The location, you can have an ED, but the actual voting booths, the actual polling places, is there any thought being given by your office to at least maybe, lower the number? I mean, everyone wants to be able to vote at the corner. I mean, I understand the convenience, but now you're getting to all these costs and polls. What's your thinking on
there's
consolidating?
There's always thoughts at that, but then there's also that the voter, it has to be contiguous.
When you say contiguous.
There are many lines, Senate line, Assembly line, et cetera, and then you have to give thought to how far you're taking the voter away from out of their district, from their area, to go and vote. We've done this, of course we constantly try to do that because we have 1,033 districts and we have about 393 polling places. So we're trying, to... But again, it's a little tricky. There's also, and then we filed too, the problem with consolidation at time is such as a case that's going on now. Guy crossed over to another area because the district's so close. What is he? So he thinks that that's part of his district. He doesn't see his name on the ballot. A big problem with suit, so he picks up the ballot and start writing his name on it. I mean, you know, we deal with a very tricky process.
Well, I know you can't do that. In Harrison, listen, my town is split.
State election law requires contiguous, meaning if you live in EDX, you cannot vote in an ED that's not contiguous in that district. So anyone that's touching, any ED touching your ED,
you can consider.
You can consider.
Well, maybe take a change of state law.
But redistricting,
but still, even in that, it's a little tricky. And Bill Burton is proof on that also. District's so close, you try to move them to whatever, the wrong machine gets put in the wrong district.
Listen, I went through election. My name was in the wrong ballot. I mean, I lived through that. But that's implementation.
That's
all. That's
state law.
Just a thought.
Just a thought.
Thank
you, Ms. Myers.
No.
He's here. Mr. Harcum.
I'll be right there. Okay. Thanks. Thank you, gentlemen. I think you know, while we're talking about what went wrong. You know, let's give the Board of Elections some credit too, because I did a lot of outreach on Election Day, and to the public, at least in my district, things were fairly seamless. You know, unless you were like me and blew the pen up in your hand by ripping the top off. You know, I heard a few things that you know, the clerks will be sending you some suggestions to make things better. But I had two quick questions, and I have to run with Legislator Rogowski. One. Commissioner Colter, you and I had chatted before the election about your concern about the reporting of results that night, and your concerns turned out to be founded. Could you tell us a little bit more about this chip form of reporting on election night and the security involved and how you think that would accelerate things?
Okay, there are two chips in the machine. One can be used for election night reporting. The other one remains with the machine, protects the integrity of the election, along with the paper reporting. But for election night, the paper that comes out of the machine, the paper report, the process in place now has election inspectors reading that tape, calling the numbers into the Board of Elections, county employees answer the phone, handwrite the results down on a piece of paper. That paper is handed to another employee who types it into the computer. All of that has to be eliminated. Every stage in that process is subject to error. We need to remove the chip. I spoke to the vendors. There are these chip readers where 20 chips can go into a machine at a time, take about a minute each to upload. The data is uploaded into our central computer that does the vote counting. I spoke to them about designing a software interface that will read that data and give it to our other system that's in place that posts everything to the web. So we're speaking to the vendors right now. I called them in. I was upset with them that none of this was done prior to the election. To their credit, they said some of these readers, some of the technology was not available. It is available now. So even they are a little bit behind the eight ball in getting all of these accessories that will make the process run smoother. But we do need to use technology.
There's a part of that, if you will remember, when we started with this process, the initial thought that there would be, whether you use the DRE machine or these scanners, that in each municipality, the clerk's office, there would be one of these base, and it would be that all the chips would come back to the clerk's office and they would be downloaded and then sent to us. So the numbers would come up. And remember, the biggest fear, if they're over over the wire service or whatever, that somebody could hack into and change the number. Remember that? That was the biggest spare on it, which brought us to this point, because that was the original intent. If you go back and remember, that was the biggest fear, even on down to Washington, that folks were going to testify that could be hacked into. Mm-hmm. So we're sort of going, which is in the right direction, finally. And perhaps if we could, in our training process before November, get the chips taken out and dropped off at the clerk's office, deputizing some folks there to bring them up to us, that it would require that we order these readers and
we could perhaps get the Deborah out a lot faster. You know, we're looking into all of that. But we'd have to eliminate that fear that if it's coming over the wire, that someone's not hacking into it.
Well, but I think if, as Commissioner said, there's the secure chip still in the machine, to cross-check.
Right. Well, there will always be a secure chip in the machine, but annoying candidates, the public are those. We add to the other thing. We probably end up with, okay, now we've got to get the other chip out of the machine to see if the first chip is right. It may happen for the first, for the first election.
Sure.
So, but it's a good idea, and we're looking into that.
I'd like to raise the 2 points about the budget as it's going on. Yes, thank you, Mr. Harkin. The overtime budget, as you received a budget of $525,000, and your current expenditures are $627,000 with one election still to go. Are things that desperate at this point? That you were just so heavily impacted by the startup cost, and is this going to go down? Or
no,
I mean, I would think with only a primary versus a general election,
it's
only going to get worse.
The general election is going to be bigger.
Right.
Sure.
But flipping over that, the contractual services was budgeted at $3,150,000 and has an available balance of $2,557,000. That may be that you've got bills out that haven't been paid, and that's why it's that way. But I'm presuming that the overtime was, in fact, by the time this run was made yesterday, had pretty much all been paid and obligated.
No.
So are you that much
wiped out here? Yeah.
Financially.
We're wiped out and the folks are wiped out.
Yep.
There's this big misnomer that people just want to work overtime. We have mandatory blackout and overtime period. Folks would like to take off, go on vacation and go whatever. We forced them to work overtime. We couldn't get the work out. We couldn't pack, you're talking, like I said, if you're down with 100 people outside helping you to 74 people, how do we get it out?
I'm worried about our employees. We're working our employees.
It's dangerous.
Some of them, and people are getting sick, and people are calling in sick. We are short-staffed.
Putting new employees on will eliminate the overtime. Let me just get Mrs. Speckman has a question.
Reggie, remember I was talking to you on the phone?
Yes.
Is that a state law or is it a county charter law? In other words, to change, most of your people are senior citizens, okay?
Right.
I know most of the people in Yonkers, okay, that work there, both Republicans and Democrats, a lot of them would love to work. It's too much to work in that period of time. If you split the time and you have...
Well, that's already been taken care of.
Yeah, but how do you do that?
They changed it in election law. The election law now allowed us to split the time.
Okay.
Now we have to start setting up to split the time. Now we have to start setting up to split the time. And we got to get some folks... Some of our inspectors who are territorial to understand, like, you can't work all day anymore. We got to put somebody else. We deal with personnel problem with some of our
people get sick, people get this, this way you have somebody. We don't want to give up. Mr. Jenkins, we're talking about two different elections. I was going to say, you're talking about the election day workers.
I'm talking about the permanency.
Right.
We need more permanent staff to eliminate the overtime because it's obvious. Okay. That these people are working. Some of them are working 18 hours a day.
Right.
They're getting sick.
Right.
It's because we're short-staffed and we have to do the work. We're on mandated election law timelines. Certain things have to go out in the mail, absentee ballots. We have to accommodate the public.
And we have objections, like for this November election, there's some independent petitions. There are folks who file objections against those petitions. We just started them yesterday because we couldn't start them. Because we didn't have the staff to do the research, because they were all working at the warehouse.
So
we have to have a ballot certified.
So the question is, because this is new, right? I mean, that part of you all, as you said, Mr. Commissioner, both of you said, this is 100 people that were basically deputized before right? Plus additional people that were connected to those individual clerks that are not in the equation. That was before, because you had a staff before. I mean, we added some people, but not 100, right? It sounds like in the budget process this year, you all need to add a significant number of people that are permanent, not 100, but some number.
No, we're trying to balance out and seize them. I'll give you an example, and one of the most important part, machine technicians. Under the old system, there were two machine technicians per municipality.
Right.
So that meant you had on election day 50 machine technicians out in the field. And our new system, because we had to hire them, we have 10 or 12 machine technicians to cover what 50 did on a new equipment.
Right.
So automatically we were shot dead right there. And we realized this, we did everything. We tried to zone them, et cetera, but who gets there faster? If we have two stationed in Yonkers, two stationed in Belford, and all municipalities going up and down the line, all the time, the response time is that much faster, which cuts down on the voters having to vote on emergency ballots on the machines being down.
But you also, usually those same machine technicians were there, those were full-time employees, and they actually used to work at the warehouse, at least the ones in Yonkers did. They were full-time employees, and they
the
were...
The Yonkers, they were. Some places, they were part-time.
Right.
Ours were full-time.
I mean, in Yonkers, we had full-time, and it was the same people that basically were monitoring the machines at for the storage area. So they knew the machines inside and out. So when the machine went out, they probably had worked on it, put in the strips, blah, 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 right? But it sounds like you need
and they were all set up with spare machines within that municipality to take out if a machine, etc. We had to get three trucks from the border pool. About 10 cars.
I don't think we've been given more than 16 new employees in the last 5 years.
That's correct. And
now we're running two locations. People going back and forth to the warehouse, we're running all the new machines, and we've absorbed all of the clerk's responsibilities. And all of that being said, we're doing a good job. We're just working our people too hard. That's why the overtime is so high.
The other thing is that, and we did notice this in the run of the budget, is that there's probably some adjustments that you have to make, because some of the things for training, we put a training bucket there for you all, right? And while it doesn't seem like enough anyway, there wasn't any allocations against the training bucket. It just sounds like you just have to, go through with your budget folks. Don't do it now, right? It's like, don't do it, but to go through with your budget folks to move things that when you did training for the inspectors out of, one bucket and put it into your training bucket so we can see it clearly, because we know that you don't have enough support.
One part this the budget folks reminded us we were left with $400,000, and we told them the truth of it is we just simply didn't have the time to get to it.
Well, that was your educational training, 40 through 60.
We just simply couldn't have the time to do it.
But you all did additional things because
we did additional things.
Right. I mean, for example, I know that you all sent the brochure to every registered voter on the new machine. Well, that was part of educational training, and I'm not sure which bucket that came out of. I'm just suggesting. Because again, for us as oversight, it would be better for us to understand, here's what the real cost of this transition was, because when we do our homeroom message and supporting you all and saying, hey, this HAVA thing sounded like this, and this is why New York was the last one to do it in the first place, because of all of these other additional concerns. And I know, Mr. Chairman, we're going to talk about the warehouse issues at a separate issue.
And when we come in,
if you all need support from us with the administration, because that's what you would need for additional dollars for overtime, for some hourly employees, no permanence there for the general election, if we could get that to the chairman of the committee, we would be happy to relate that over to the administration because it has to be done. You all can't have employees working 18 to 20 hours.
We're not asking for high-level employees. We need a lot. You know, we need a lot of work.
We don't need managers.
We had.
But that, all of that being right said, for the size of this county, we've done a better job than most large counties with half the employees they have. Okay. And the only additional cost was overtime.
And the overtime, and you know, and but we got, you know, the reality of is, and in this primary, which is surprisingly, you don't see any candidates running around saying they
cheated. Yeah. How many?
And I don't think we have any lawsuits.
We have no lawsuits.
That in itself is amazing.
It's pretty impressive, considering what a Allegra Dengler was saying lately. Okay, gentlemen, thank you very much for coming. May I have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Moved by Legislator Meyer, second by Legislator Speckman. All in favor say aye.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
So
we are adjourned.
Take the rest of the day off?
Yeah, take the rest of the day off.
You gotta work on the election.
On rules.
Kenny, were you able to watch that while you were on?
No, I was still in the car, right? And then when I got here, I turned it and I was gonna do it from the screen, and I said, well, I'm gonna walk.